Julie Hammonds, after reading your fantastic novel, Blue Mountain Rose, the first thing I want to do is book a trip to Flagstaff, Arizona, which is never a sentence I thought I would find myself saying. So thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, and now in its 19th year, number 957, Blue Mountain Rose. Julie Hammonds' debut novel, Blue Mountain Rose, is a love story about the theater, about actors, directors, stage managers, and most of all, Shakespeareans. Appropriately enough, Blue Mountain Rose goes on sale April 23rd, which is Shakespeare's birthday, so I was thrilled to talk to Julie about how her novel came to be and why she set it in her hometown of Flagstaff, Arizona.
Well, it is a little bit of a love letter to my hometown, which is a mountain town at 7,000 feet elevation on the side of a volcano. But it's a wonderful little town, and we do have a Shakespeare theater here, but it's nothing like the Blue Mountain Rose. I think I'm required by law to say that.
And yet, it's either fan fiction or a documentary about Flagstaff, but it's Blue Mountain Rose is absolutely fan fiction about the great summer Shakespeare festival that we all wish we lived next to or worked at year round. What was the impetus for you to create this, not just this world, but this entire theater grounds, the Blue Mountain Rose Theater?
Well, so Flagstaff does have a Shakespeare festival, the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival, which we call Flag Shakes. And it started 10 years ago as a gypsy group of actors coming up from Phoenix in the summertime to escape the really hellacious heat down there and come up to the mountain and perform Twelfth Night. And they, ever since then, have established themselves here in Flagstaff. They're a resident professional theater company that does not have its own theater. And I've been involved with them since their first season in 2015. At first, I was sort of just a general helper person. And then when they decided to really establish themselves, they became a nonprofit and they needed to found a board. And they said, Julie, can you found a board? And I said, I guess so. And I figured out how to do that. And then I was the founding board president. I put the board together and I was on the board for 6 years and did everything during that time. Helped us figure out the ticketing system, helped develop a manual for house management. And Flagshakes performs in all kinds of locations around our little mountain town of Flagstaff. So I think in some ways, Blue Mountain Rose was my effort to create for Flagshakes what I could not create for them as a board member, which is a beautiful outdoor theater space to perform in. I basically took the earliest and best version of Ashland, Oregon and the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and I brought them to my little town because I could do that in fiction.
Yeah, well, and it's funny you talk about, I love that origin story for the novel, but you talk about the best versions of something. This is absolutely the best version of a collection of theater artists. For those who want more melodrama in their novels or their backstage romances, I'm not sure that Blue Mountain Rose will deliver, but I loved the fact that it was free of too much artistic actor nonsense that I don't like in my fiction, and I really don't like in my professional theater career. Was that a conscious choice on your part to make most of the artists involved their best selves?
I think it was. I've had the privilege and fortune of being a stage manager a couple of times in a couple different theaters for Shakespeare plays. And in my experience, the actors that I worked with as a stage manager were incredible professionals. They took their work seriously. They did not add drama to the workplace unnecessarily. They did not bring their, you know, wild and crazy personal lives to the rehearsal room. Everyone has behaved admirably. And yeah. I really respect that. And I love that world. I loved seeing it from behind the scenes as a stage manager. And I loved recreating it as an author. And I wanted to do it justice. I wanted to do justice to those professionals who are just bringing their best selves every day.
And do you had experience on boards, on as stage management, as working front of house? Have you ever been an actor as well?
Not since fourth grade.
You peaked and retired at the top of your profession.
I did. Yes, I did. I just, what I think I really love about theater is the collaborative aspect of when a company comes together to put on a show and tell a story. And I love watching that happen and helping that happen, but I don't need to be the person in front of the spotlight.
And why did you decide to tell this story as a novel, not as a play?
I've studied playwriting and I've written a few things that were play-like, but I am a long-form narrative writer. Just that's what my muse calls for. And mm-hmm. So I think my book could become a play. I think it could become a screenplay. But for me, when I was creating, when I was sitting down at my desk all by myself, the novel form is what works for my weird little brain.
Yeah, for the stories you want to tell. And it is on a sort of an epic scale, a certain amount. There's a prologue set in another country. And there's a fantastic, I don't think I'm giving anything away to say that there's a lovely motorcycle bike chase in the mountains.
There is drama. There's drama in it. It's just not drama. Over the top, like you said.
Did you set it in, it's set in like 2008, 2009. Did you set it back then because smartphones were less of a thing or because we knew less about celebrity and the perils of celebrity then? Or was that either of those things conscious for you at all?
I like both of those facts. They helped me tell the story I wanted to tell. But when I was thinking about when to set it, originally I started working on the book at the beginning of 2023. And I thought about setting it then, you know, post-pandemic and theaters are coming back from the pandemic and they're having financial trouble. And then I thought, no, it's a little too soon for me to want to really immerse and stay right here in this moment that's so still so difficult for so many people. But I want to work with some of the themes of this moment. So I wanted to work with the financial difficulty and the fact that theaters and live theater sometimes do go through these periods where they're struggling. And so the most recent time that I could think of was the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. And I knew from talking with friends in the theater world that that had been a very difficult time for them. And so that was the perfect time for me. But like you said, cell phones were less a part of our lives then, which makes some aspects of storytelling easier. And celebrity is a big issue in my book. It's a very big challenge for one of the main characters, Peter. And it was still difficult back then. In 2008, 2009, you had a movie like Twilight come out, and you had an actor like Robert Pattinson who went from somebody nobody knew to somebody literally everybody knew. And so it was difficult then, but I think not as difficult as it is today with social media just chewing people up.
Yeah, but we did have IMDb back in 2008. And that was perhaps maybe the least realistic or believable part of the novel, is that none of the other actors in the company would have gone to IMDb immediately going, who is this guy?
That's true, but he has a different name, right? He's going under his fake name, Peter Dunmore, and he's never acted under that name, so they wouldn't have found him, and then they might have told themselves, oh, this guy's from New Zealand, of course I haven't heard from him. Right. So he's a British actor who's undercover.
Yeah, you skirt that plausibility issue pretty well.
I hope so.
Hi, I'm Scott Simon of NPR News. You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Fool.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This month and next, we're bringing back our newly updated version of All the Great Books Abridged, performing it in Harrisonburg, Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky, Elyria, Ohio, Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Julie Hammons, whose wonderful debut novel, Blue Mountain Rose, goes on sale April 23rd, 2025.
Most of the characters in the book, I mean, which I guess would make sense, they all work at a Shakespeare theater, they're incredibly well-versed and have large chunks of Shakespeare text ready at their lips' fingertips to quote. Are you that good in quoting the text and that knowledgeable about the text? Or how much time did you spend searching online collections of Shakespeare to get just the right text, specifically Hamlet?
Specifically Hamlet, I had the Folger Hamlet handy on my desktop. But also, I had the great fun of watching various versions of Hamlet on Netflix. And there are some just beautiful performances of Hamlet on Netflix. I took the deep dive and watched as many of them as I could find. And that really kind of refreshed my brain for Hamlet and the emotions and themes of Hamlet, and then also just the lines in Hamlet that might be useful. And I think as I was writing, it was a combination of, I bet there's a good line for this. I'm going to put a placeholder and do a search. Or sometimes, and especially with Peter, who's the actor who's learning the role of Hamlet, those lines were coming to me pretty easily, which I think is all about Shakespeare's wit and not really about mine, but just Shakespeare's words stay in your mind long after a play ends. And that was just such a delight to hear that voice in my head when I needed it.
And to discover how much Shakespeare's lines make sense in this new modern context that you've put them in.
Yeah, like, I mean, my characters do often speak to each other using Shakespeare's lines. And to me, it doesn't sound forced. It sounds like they're using Shakespeare to express their emotion or their thought at that moment. And it seems like the right thing to say. And of course, that's because it's Shakespeare. It generally is the right thing to say.
You said that the long form storytelling, the novel form, is the most conducive to the story you want to tell and the kind of writing you do. This is your first published novel. Is it your first novel?
No, I've written
I wondered.
Two other novels that just, you know, they were good exercises, really good learning exercises for me. And then they belonged in the drawer and that's where they're going to stay.
Nothing's ever wasted. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was.
You have to practice.
You have to practice. And it feels, I mean, for a first novel, it feels very assured.
Oh, thank you.
So on that level, it was fantastic. Are you a fan also of the Canadian TV show Slings and Arrows?
Oh, very much so. That is a hilarious television show. I love it.
Yeah. My wife and I, when we lived in Los Angeles, we pitched a show about a theater company, a touring theater company, because there are so many stories. And like you, we love the world of a group of people coming together and putting on a show and figuring it out, and a group of professionals. It's one of the reasons I didn't care for Smash, because it was so soapy. People loved it, and I'm in the minority, clearly. But Or maybe I'm not. It got canceled, so maybe I'm not in the minority. But I do love I love those stories. So it feels like my question is, which I will eventually get to, is that it feels like there are more stories possibly that could be told in the world of the Blue Mountain Rose. Do you have sequels in mind, or the main relationship that I won't talk about because I don't want it to be a spoiler?
I think so. I have various ideas that come knocking at the door for book two or book three, and I you have to be nice to your muse, right? So I always appreciate when an idea pops into my head, and I definitely write it down, but I do not then sit down and spend the next 8 hours fleshing it out and coming up with scenes and coming up with dramatic arcs and things like that. I can't go there right now because I'm working on marketing this book, and that means trying to introduce this first book to people who will enjoy it, and that is a full-time job.
The creative side of the brain and the business side of the brain, do you find you have to work in two different rooms to accomplish two different tasks?
Or do I wish I had that luxury. I sit at the same computer, basically. But to me, you know, the whole thing about marketing is this book is like a new life form, and it's going out into the world, and it needs friends. And I really look forward to and enjoy those conversations where my book finds a friend. That's delightful. I feel like a proud mom who's, you know, watching her kid out there in the world. It's really very fun.
Well, and the question about, you know, what's your favorite role you've ever played, or what's your favorite show that you've written? And the answer is always, well, the most talented, beautiful kid, right? That's the answer. But so this child that you have birthed, this Blue Man, is not only it's a lovely read, it's a handsome book. I mean, just as an object, it looks good on a shelf. It looks good on a coffee table. Did you have any input into the design, or were you lucky that way?
Both. I had input into choosing the designers, and then especially the cover designer who came up with this beautiful, deep, rich blue color with the gold lettering on it. She and I sat down before she had even sketched anything out, and we just looked at other book covers that I like. She had sent me to a bookstore to pull books off the shelf and take pictures. And I had sent those to her, and we talked about why I liked various things. And so she already had a sense of, for some reason, I like a beautiful frame around shiny text. I'm a raven that way. I like shiny things. So we started with that, and that's where we ended, is a beautiful, she created a floral frame talking about blue mountain roses. And then we came up with a little medallion, kind of a logo for the Blue Mountain Rose Theater Company, that's also in gold and shiny on the cover. And I'm very pleased with it. I'm very proud to introduce my special child to the world.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Julie Hammond's debut novel, Blue Mountain Rose, goes on sale April 23rd, 2025. Go to bluemountainrose.com for more information. Then send us your Shakespearean fan fiction via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks as always to Sparkly Vampire Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Lori Hunt. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Scott Simon from National Public Radio. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 957 2871st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. You say you studied a lot of performances of Hamlet to kind of get into the character and get into the mindset of the character. But did you, I have it on the shelf behind me, did you study the reduced Hamlet shown there on the cover of the DVD, leaping in the air back when I could leap?
Oh, Austin, I wish I could say yes.
What?
I know, it's shocking. I would never lie to you, though, so I'll have to say that's in my future. That's a future delight.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.